Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Matthew Lux, cartoonist behind The Time Museum, a new graphic novel from First Second. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 330 of the podcast with Matthew Lux. Matt's newest graphic novel pits six young people against one another in a competition to see who can win employment as an intern at the Earth Time Museum. And the way that Matt balances out our six main characters is amazing. There's always a character to root for, and always a character who will surprise you. Oh, and there's dinosaurs. Because what time travel book would be complete without dinosaurs, right? There are also some other amazing challenges the interns go through. There's the most incredible library you have ever read or seen. And an evil force that keeps popping up throughout the story. Ah, my word. Just go read this book. But first, enjoy the chat. Here's episode number 330 of the podcast with Matthew Lux. Welcome to the podcast, Matt Lux. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we get to talk about the Time Machine. The Time Museum. Yeah. Oh, we can talk about the Time Machine, too.
Sure.
All these things that are running through my head as before we were starting to record, and that was in my mind of like, did you, I don't know why I'm obsessing over asking you the question of, were you assigned reading The Time Machine by H.G. Wells when you were a kid? I don't know why that
I was not, actually. Well, I only know that mainly from the movie, but it's the old movie, not the remake from the, what was that, the 90s or early 2000s.
I did not watch the remake.
But it wasn't terrible. Jeremy Irons was in it. It really wasn't terrible. But the original is I think it, you know, it's of the time, but I think it holds up. It's fun.
Well, time travel is sort of a thing that has always fascinated me, and it's a fun thing to talk about. Mm. So I'm glad that you pour it into the Time Museum. Why don't we start this way? Would you mind just sharing a little bit about the story of the Time Museum? What's your book talk? How are you pitching this to people?
Sure. Well, the Time Museum, I would say the best way to start it, it's about how the main character, her name is Delia Bean. She's a teen or a young kid who is kind of book smart, really into learning and into kind of like nerdy stuff, but is a little awkward. But she basically finds out that her uncle runs a epic museum that essentially would be described as the Museum of the Earth. It's like if the Metropolitan Museum of Art was for the entire world, and not only that, they use time travel to get all of their exhibits. It's kind of like an exciting idea from the perspective of, I guess, even just from learning, I suppose. But this is something that always kind of crossed my mind when I would go to museums myself. But anyway, back to the story. So the main character finds out this wonderful museum, but she ends up competing for an internship position there against about five other kids from different time periods throughout history. We have a girl from the future from Japan, a boy from ancient Rome, a Neanderthal boy, and a girl from the medieval times, and a boy from about 1,000 or about 5,000 years in the future. So I tried to kind of make it a nice mix of not only time periods, but also relatable time periods. I think it's I got to think about that too, but also just places, areas that I was interested in, I suppose. And it's a lot of fun. It's essentially an adventure, but adventure story. I almost kind of feel like it, time travel kind of like makes it sizzle, but I think it's a little bit more of like an adventure story, but also very much like a character. It's very character driven
I
because
would
it's not
agree.
only about the main character Delia, who's just a really fun character, to me at least. She's just a very, she's kind of like a little quiet and a little like self-conscious, but it's like if you know, like I feel like if you know people like that, when you get to know them, you find out that there's always kind of like a very strong side to them that they just aren't always super forward about until you get to know them. And I think that she's a bit like that. But also the other kids that she ends up interacting with, it was a really fun kind of ensemble to create when I was working on the story.
Yeah, I love, Matt, that you have not only playing with the idea that kids are sort of the same no matter what time they meet kids. I mean, 'cause that feeling of, yeah, as much as I love or don't love it, I am the same person that like my dad was when he was my age, or my son will be, or that sort of universality of age was something special, I thought. And then also the same qualities that people have of one-upping one another, or of betrayal, or of pairing up against another person. There were so many things here that I liked the way that you played, as you said, with the characters, with focusing on the characters and placing them in different situations and in different time periods, but really having it be a focus on the people, and have it be a focus on, I was going to say, when we're in situations as groups, knowing that sometimes a leader has to step up, and sometimes you might not feel like you're equipped to be a leader, but other people might see strengths in you that even you didn't realize you possessed.
Yeah, and I think that's a common experience, especially for kids. You know, it's when you first are starting to, especially when you become a teenager, but it's when you first start to really kind of become aware of who you are or who you can be. And also that's, I think that's probably part of why so many young people become very self-conscious and socially awkward, because you start to become aware of expectations also. And it's interesting. And I wanted to play around a little bit with that, but I also wanted to show that like a lot of dealing with that or discovering of yourself has to do with the people you're around and the friends that you make. And when you're a young person, I feel, and it's, I think it's also for old people like me, but like when you're a young person, I feel like friendships just are so important and are so potent almost. And it's so important to find the right people that can help you become the person you want to be and should be. And all these things have been kind of in my mind when I was kind of plotting that aspect of the story out. I know that there had to be like Delia being the kind of character that she is, one being the main character, but also being very book smart, kind of having like a hidden, like strange streak to her, but also kind of like a hidden leadership kind of, you know, there's definitely an edge of leadership to her that she just doesn't realize she has until she ends up going through a lot of the things she goes through in the time museum. But also how the other characters kind of like bringing that out in their own in individual and unique ways. Like there's a character, there's the Scottish girl from the medieval times. Character's name is Greer in this book. She's very headstrong and extremely bold and very, very rival, very much a rival to Delia for quite a, I would say even all of the story, but especially in the beginning, they're definitely kind of clashing. There's very different personality types, but in a lot of ways, it kind of brings out like a competitive streak in Delia that she probably didn't realize that she had, and kind of makes her see, well, how am I going to be reacting to something that I don't really like, or I don't really feel like I understand. So, and some of the other characters as well. I definitely an ensemble kind of situation,
Yeah.
and it was fun to do that because I've never done that before with that many characters.
Right. I mean, you're spinning a lot of plates. And I want to actually get into that, but first, you started talking about museums. So tell me, museums, your life in museums. I grew up going to museums. But the fact that there's a quality here that shows me that at some point you wondered, yeah, but what if one of these artifacts was from the future? Or what if there could really be like legit dinosaurs and whales? Not just here's what we think they might have looked like.
Yeah, I guess again it was just kind of like a natural progression, for museums for me. I too grew up going to many museums with my family. Usually I was very bored by a lot of them, to be quite honest, at least as a young person. But well, to be honest, now that I'm thinking about it, a lot of the museums I was brought to with my family were not like the major museums. So,
Where did you grow up? Where are these museums that you're talking about?
well, I grew up in Connecticut, in like Eastern Connecticut,
Okay.
so not too far from any of the major city centers, but we never went to any of them when I was a kid. We Where I grew up in Connecticut is would be definitely, even though it's Connecticut, is definitely pretty rural, a pretty rural area of Connecticut, and we tend to, we would do vacations mainly just to, down the coast or up to, Maine or Massachusetts. So we would usually go to just either like things like historic towns, because there's a lot of them in the Northeast, things like Plymouth Town,
Right.
Williamsburg, and Sturbridge Village was the close one in Massachusetts. And they were a lot of fun, actually, even though they were kind of specific to one time period. But we would also go to art museums, like local art museums or smaller local or anything museums, I suppose. But I think like the big one was because when I went to college in Manhattan at the School of Visual Arts, and that I had gone to the MoMA in high school for like a day trip with my art class. But the first time I went to the Met, which is one of the most amazing museums in the world, I believe, it's absolutely fantastic. And it's huge. And the first time I went was in college, and it was just really, really incredible. I would say, like, because everything's there. Like, if you take a right, you're in like ancient Egypt. If you decide to go straight, you go up to like the Renaissance. Or if you take a left, it's like it's Roman. It's all like Roman and Greek sculptures. I could be a little off on my directions, but in general, it was really. And not only that, I'm always like super impressed by the architecture of these places.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
like the Natural History Museum is like that also.
I was
That's
going
on
to
the
say that
west
same
side.
thing. Yeah, I come from outside of DC, so we have all the Smithsonian museums, but at in New York, that you're right. That's where I first learned from, I think one of the docents that took us on a tour said that when you go to a museum, you need to not try to see everything, or else you won't be able to appreciate those little things that you can see. So you go and you hear about, I don't know, 20 pieces in a day and let that
Yeah.
soak in. And I just thought,
That
man.
must be difficult for the Smithsonian. I mean, even one of the Smithsonian museums, and there's like 20 of them, I think,
Yeah.
in DC. But they're so big and they're so overwhelming. But that was the cool thing about going to school, and one of the cool things about going to school in Manhattan and New York is I didn't have to do that. I could be like, I'm going to go to the Met this weekend, and I'm just going to hang out at the modern art section, or I want to see the Asian Amer the Asian art wing or
Right,
something.
yeah.
So you can do that for a couple hours, and then just go hang out in Central Park with your friends. We used to do that all the time. It was very fun.
Nice. Well, good that you have that affinity with the museums too, and I love then that you were able to take it and bring it into a story. Where for you, did the story seed come from? Were you holding on to this kind of idea for a while, or was this something that just sort of lightning bolt hit you?
It was kind of like it's interesting because it's weird how stories kind of pop up, but like this one for me, I was just thinking how I really like time travel stories, just in general. They're just enjoyable. It's just the potential of what you can do. And I was like, I was just thinking to myself, like, I've never thought of a good time travel idea. So I just kind of like, I was walking home from work one day in Brooklyn. And I was just thinking, I'm like, well, what would I do if I wanted to do a time travel genre story? So I just kind of started thinking about it. And I think my mind just immediately went to that idea of, I just was really into museums at the time. But part of it was when I was working on the Saltwater Taffy series, I was trying to kind of give it a historic kind of feel to a lot of the just like the art, but also the surroundings of that story.
Right.
It's kind of like it's like a YA like modern Hardy Boys kind of thing where there's a lot of like sea monster type stuff, and like it's very New England centric, so there's like I very much try to give it like an old like Harper's Weekly kind of print vibe to the look and the feel of some of the things, even though it's supposed to sort of be modern time. But anyway, that kind of like I guess just like I was museums are always kind of on my mind. I just didn't enjoy them. Not like I go very often anymore, but so that idea popped in my head. I'm like, well, museums, like they're great. They're like time machines themselves. Like, what if you were working at one that actually used time travel to get their stuff? And I think that kind of just struck me immediately. And I'm like, but that's a good thing to hinge this all around. It's like, that's an easy one right there. So I was really, and when you get excited about a story idea, your mind goes all over the place. So by the time I got home, I actually had the bare bones idea, for the whole, story essentially.
That's awesome. A walk home from work and you just struggle with it. Wait, what do you do for work outside of making comics?
Oh, right now I'm lucky enough to be doing full-time comics.
Oh,
And at the
wonderful.
time I was a picture framer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I did that for a very long time. And at the time, I actually worked like about 20 minutes away from where I lived in Brooklyn, so that was very
That's
convenient.
convenient, yeah. And toiled away as a cartoonist on the side. How about it?
Yep,
I
that's what
love
you
it.
do.
Well, as you do, that's exactly right. Well, congratulations on being able to write full time.
Thank you.
Okay, so you have this story idea. When this story idea came, because you're juggling like six plus characters, but definitely six main characters all the time in this story. When the story idea presented itself to you, was there so much going on, or was that did you find yourself bringing on characters to strike the balance? You've got enough characters that they are really quite seamlessly pairing up here and there, which I really like that you can sort of mix them up as much as you do. But it certainly does, I think it adds to the complexity of the story to have to balance them all out, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. For the characters for the Time Museum, I pairing it up is a good way to put it because that was part of it. I think I came to the conclusion that it had to be an even number because I think that's when you're problem solving with a team, it's kind of inevitable that you may need to have two people grouping together. So that probably it sounds arbitrary. That probably helped. But part of it too was when I came up with the idea for Delia to basically be competing against these kids for an internship position or for a job essentially at this museum, I kind of knew that the idea was that they are supposed to, it's competitive, but they're kind of naturally filling in each other's, weak points as kind of teams do. And it's sort of like part of the theme of the story in general is to kind of like learning to kind of get over adversity and work together in certain situations. So that dictated quite a bit of the character direction for the secondary, for the kids. like I was saying before about Greer, how she's kind of like temperamentally the opposite of Delia, where she's kind of a hothead and kind of spouts off and very, very bold, or not really bold, but more like, I guess, headstrong. And then, like some of the other characters, for the girl from the there's a girl from Tokyo in about 250 years in the future, and she kind of becomes Delia's first like buddy at the museum. When she first goes there, she's a little overwhelmed, but she's kind of paired up with Michiko as a way to kind of like. Just like I said, to show her around, and they end up basically become pretty good friends from the very get-go. And she kind of fills in the place of like the best friend character, where she kind of like supports Delia, and then she supports her. Her character is a little bit, I'd say, a little bit more outgoing than Delia's, so she kind of like, but she's like totally on Delia's side at all times. So she kind of like draws the more outgoingness out of her. As I think a lot of people's best friends would, you know, it's like a safe person that allows you to kind of feel a little bit more self-assured. And I guess some of the other characters, like we needed. I just part of it was also their skill set. Like Delia kind of falls into the leadership position. Things like the character Reggie, who's supposed to be from Toronto. From the I think about 5,000 years in the future, which is kind of like an abstract, I'll get into that later, but like it's kind of an abstract thought, trying to figure out, you know, okay, this person's from 200 years in the future, what's that going to be like? Well, this guy's from 2,000, like 3,000 years in the future. You start to kind of lose perspective.
You do. You're from so far in the future that we're not even counting that high yet.
Yeah. But anyway, like he's kind of like a book smart kid. He's supposed to be from an era that's like very that's gotten over, you know, wars and over conflicts, and are pretty much all about, you know, this being smart and good stewards of the world and that sort of thing, which is you know, so the idea is that he's definitely kind of like a nerd. He's very smart. He's like a genius essentially, but he's also not the most physically like a fit person, or he's not as up on like running around and the sort of like mishaps that can happen on a time mission where you're running away from dinosaurs and so and things like that. So that's his weaker points, but he's also extremely intelligent. So it was kind of fun to balance that. Then the character Dex, who's essentially a Neanderthal, which was an interesting idea to kind of explore. I kind of like went into an angle that he was like a kind of Neanderthal that we don't really know about, that was actually as intelligent as a human, that just didn't, you know, survive the evolutionary, you know, test. So he's actually, I made him pretty much just as smart as a regular person, temperamentally also. But also he's pretty strong, and he's definitely a lot more physically active and on top of things during the missions. And I think that was a necessary character to have in an ensemble also.
Yeah, I think you've balanced everything out well. And before I get into some plot things that I think are brilliant, let me just point out, as the librarian here on the podcast, that your library of the world is amazing.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you
And the
think that.
Robo-Kitties, oh my gosh, please mock those up for your school visits. They
Oh
are
yeah.
amazing.
Oh good. Yeah.
I mean, I happen to be one that when I visit towns, I like to go into the libraries because for me, as much as museums are too, libraries are these hallowed places. So to walk into these beautiful libraries is a special thing. And here within a book, you tap into that wonder, which makes me feel like you must be coming from a place where you are respecting libraries as well and that beautiful architecture of them. But man,
Yeah.
man, oh man, it was a cool place. I like that
Thank you.
location.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically, if we're going to have the museum of the world, then it has to be like the library is the ultimate library in the in place of learning of the entire world. So and it was from an artistic perspective, it was not the easiest page to draw, because I wanted it to look like the rotunda. Where it's a huge inside of a dome, that's like a big point of the museum where I designed the whole museum kind of around like a big ultimate dome, and then the library is supposed to be inside that dome. So just one figuring that out to make it look realistic and getting the perspective on essentially something that's not easy to reference, because I don't think there's any domes in New York. And like I said, the Rotunda is the only one I could think about, so I had some pictures of it, but I haven't been there since I was in 8th grade. So, but yeah, it was really fun actually to design that, because I wanted it to be like just this beautiful, like the idea is that every relevant book in history is in this space. And even though that's not totally realistic, because there's so many books in history, I just kind of wanted that idea of grandness. And you're right, the way you say, like, the library is a hallowed ground, and even like your local library, there's just always going to be something special about that. At least I feel there should be, and there always was for me, whether it was just my school library or the local library in New York or Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Think they're very valuable places.
Well, I think not only having this beautiful space that you drew with this tree in the center, which just feels like a root of knowledge and growth. It's very symbolic. But to have then these cats that just retrieve whatever you need, I just thought it was wonderful. There were little nods in there that you did. And then to get into the, I mean, if we get into some of the story without giving too much away. The idea of competing for this internship is that these characters have to go through these time bends to compete in different tasks. And part of the fun was discovering how they would all function within these different tasks. I mean, when you send them back to dinosaurs to gather a certain number of items and right away establish, like, don't leave this ridge, and then the characters are just gone. That was fun, but for me, the one that I just thought, I've never thought of a challenge like this before, and it was such to me a brilliant idea for a time travel based challenge to put the characters in London in the year 3000 something and have them try to find. I remember because I wrote it down, you called it time discrepancies. That these items have sort of slipped into London in the year 3000 something. And they have to identify items that don't fit because they're from like the future or the past, but they don't belong in this. Well, for Delia, they don't belong in this future present. Was just so cool because then it contextualizes the need for those six characters to talk about what they know, and it makes them all have strength in this one task. I just thought, man, that is a story quality there that you were employing that just was exactly what the characters needed.
Thank you. I can't really remember how I came up with it, but usually, like, it was probably just what, like, that's what had to happen, like, because of what I've written, like. It was like that was the natural progression of the kids' relationship with each other, is that they needed
Yes.
to learn to work together. And that's probably, I think I knew that I wanted, I think I knew what the climax was going to be. Not to get too much into it, the idea of things slipping out of the wrong time period and showing up at this particular time period in London has very much to do with the plot of the story. So I think I had that in mind. I think it all just kind of evolved together. It's not always easy to explain, like, oh, I came up with this idea from this and that. Especially when, once you've got like the basic idea, a lot of these things just pretty much flow into the natural direction that they're meant to go. That sounds kind of, silly, I
No
suppose,
way.
or
Yeah.
a cop out for an
No
explanation, but
way.
it really
Yeah.
does. Storytelling really does work that way sometimes.
It
It just kind of
does.
like, and sometimes you're just, like, here's an idea I had or a visual, because a lot of my ideas actually spring from visuals. Since I'm an artist, I went to art school. I even though I write, I still kind of consider myself an artist first, which is probably not correct anymore, but. So I actually do a lot. I get a lot of my ideas from like visual ideas, even like illustrations that I do or sketches I do. Like you mentioned, like the how the Library of the World has like a decrepit old ancient tree in it. Like, I think that was my first idea for that library, and a lot of other things in general. But
Well,
the
I was just
oh,
going to
sorry.
say, no, I was just going to say, I think that there is that quality to writing where there's a point when the story has to lead you. That's where you get to the best writing, is when you're following what's logical to your story, if that makes
Yeah.
sense. And so you're all of the decisions you made, I think, are why the book worked as well as it did for me, because I felt like this is the situation we need to be in order for our characters to resolve the conflicts that they find themselves in.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was fun kind of figuring out
Good. I'm glad it was fun for you. That's good.
I mean, it's kind of like a puzzle, like, writing something that ends up getting a little complicated is kind of like doing a puzzle. So you're kind of like, in a fun way, because you're kind of like, one, it had to be like, luckily I've only been there twice, but I have been to London before. I don't think I could have really written that whole scene unless I had been there, even though it's from a different time period. But I needed to at least know a little bit about, just England and London in general to kind of gauge, what would make sense. And I did a little bit of research, probably not as much as you might expect, but just ideas for like what would be a relevant thing, or what would be something that would, doesn't fit into a time period that one of the characters would totally get, but some of the other characters would not. And a lot of it was just kind of fun gags that I made up. There's this, like, probably my favorite scene in the entire book is in that where the character Greer, who's originally from like medieval times in Scotland, but she actually has time travel. She's the only one of the kids who has time travel before, which we don't really get too much into in the story, but it kind of shows that she has a bit of a little bit more knowledge of different time periods than the rest. But there's a point in that in London where she comes across one of those street performers that spray paints themselves silver and doesn't move. It just stands there. And I don't know if you've ever been and seen those guys. Like, I think the first time I ever saw one was in New Orleans, and it really did perplex me as to like, why is this a performance? Like, this is very weird. And like, you see
I've
them, I think you see them in New York too, but you see them all over the place. So I thought that was a great idea to her. It like, so when Greer sees this guy, she's completely perplexed by it. And not only is she's also really, frankly, very disturbed by it. And like, she brings Delia over and she's like, oh yeah, we've seen these guys in my time period all the time, but I don't know if they're here or not, And it was just super fun because like Greer just is almost terrified by this guy, and like to Delia, this is like, well, it's just a street performance, and they kind of figure it out from there. But that's another thing too. A lot of my storylines, a lot of them do kind of come off of from just jokes and kind of gags, and I feel like that's just a lot of fun way to write, because you can pepper more serious things around them, but like, you always want to have some fun, jokes to kind of throw in there.
I think you did an awesome job on the book. I love it, and
Thank you.
I can't wait for my kids to be reading it in our library. But I also saw in the back of the book that we're advertising that the story is continuing. So
Yes, it is.
congratulations. There's more. I'm sure you're hard at work on it now, right?
I am actually, yeah. I'm hard at work drawing it right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
It's really cool. It's really cool to be like, it's weird for one, because it took me a long time to do the first one. Not just to the drawing and all of the art, but just coming up with everything and the idea. So working on the second one now is it's really fulfilling. It's really cool, and it's fun to just be like, all right, now I can kind of explore some of the character traits of Delia that I didn't get a chance to in the first book, as well as some of the other kids. I'm able to kind of like see a little bit more about like a lot of different things with the kids, and also introducing a few new characters. It's really cool. It's like the first book, even though I did series before, this book was a pretty hefty book, and it had a lot of stuff going on. So it's even though it's a lot of work, it's really fun to be able to really explore a lot of ideas and characters like this.
That's great, Matt. And I was gonna say, just in reference to your drawing, that you said you were doing the work on that now. I wanted to say, because I've known your work since Saltwater Taffy, and I've loved since then your line work. I love how thick
Oh,
your
thank
line
you.
is, and just the design that way. So much so that when this book arrived in my mail, I didn't recognize your name. I recognized your line first. That was something that spoke to me, and I thought, oh, this is great.
That's like the nicest thing you can say to an artist. That's actually pretty
Well, there's
great.
that. And that will, coming from the place that I come from, reading comics, that I write, but I don't illustrate, so I don't know art that way. But I think that a lot of my students don't know art that way too, but rather we tend to know you for your style. I would not be surprised that my students can identify you because of your style. And that's a really neat thing that you have a voice not only in your storytelling, but as a cartoonist, you have a voice in the way you draw characters and the way you draw stories. I mean, for me, the way you tell stories is always about character, and I appreciate that about you. So just for that, thank you for your style and for the way you approach story, because it's a unique voice and I love it.
Thank
It's
you.
great.
Yeah, it's fun. Like I said before, I went to art school, so I was definitely always think of myself as the artist over a writer. But if you're doing a genre like comics, and especially if you're lucky enough to be drawing your own stories like I am, you're able to basically factor that in. Like a lot of my character, my characters sort of seamlessly link up to their designs and to their art, the art that I draw. I think it allows me to be able to be more, I guess, have a more iconic style. It definitely helps my humor, I think. I think I'm really able to really nail like a joke that I'm trying to like convey because I'm also drawing it and not just writing it. And I can kind of like. I'm sure there are a lot of I'm sure there are a lot of instances in my scripts where my editors are like, "What? I don't understand that. This is going to be funny," but I could be like, "No. When I draw it, you'll understand."
Well, that is amazing. And I'm glad that you're making such great books for kids. I want to
Thank you.
thank you and wrap up our conversation
Sure.
by giving you a chance. I mentioned this beforehand to let you say a word to your readers, me being one of them, but specifically this time focusing on the younger readers that are going to find your book, Matt. So I'm going to leave you here. Tomorrow I'll see a library full of children, full of your readers. What message can I bring to them from you?
Well, I guess the first thing I would say to anyone who reads my books is thank you. This really means a lot to me that anyone would be interested enough in reading my work. But I guess in general, like the thing that I would want kids or any of my readers to take away from my work is that one is to, I guess, like a lighthearted kind of feel to my work. Like I think that. If that to kind of like not take things too seriously, but also to be serious, if that sounds a little weird. I don't want to say like, you should just never be serious, but the reason I write books is to have fun and to enjoy it, but also to kind of like be, but in a responsible way. So. I guess I'm getting off topic, but I guess again, like for the Time Museum, I wrote it with the idea of one, just to have a fun adventure that involved time travel, which is extremely exciting, fun to read and fun to write. But also, I was really, really happy to have my first main character being a girl. I was really, it really was enjoyable to explore a girl from a kid from that age group. And I hope that they feel that she's a thoughtful, well-rounded, and interesting person. That celebrates learning and celebrates being quirky and celebrates friendship and being accepting of other people and people that are different and just being relaxed and okay with who you are. I mean, that was definitely a very important thing to me about this book, even though it's about time travel. But it's definitely very much about finding not only that, but finding people that accept you for who you are and finding a group of people and a safe place to either work in or to be around was also an important thing because it's something that I myself had to find when I was young, and it's very important. So, and to keep reading is wonderful. Whether they're comics or regular books, reading is very important and extremely enjoyable.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Michael Sampson and Brian One share Spunky Little Monkey, a new picture book by the late Bill Martin Jr. and Michael and Brian. That will have you jumping around, tapping your toes, and getting a little silly. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.